going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, yo, welcome in to WWL, kicking off day two of the 2025 NFL draft coverage, heading into rounds two and three. I'm Jeff Nowak, alongside Charlie Long, Cullen Steele at Master Control. And we, you know, didn't have the fireworks at the end of the first round that maybe we might have expected with a potential trade, with quarterbacks. We only saw two quarterbacks go off the board in the first round. The Saints ended up with Texas offensive tackle Kelvin Banks at number 9, filling a pretty big need with a pretty big body, kind of building that bookend tackle situation across from Talia Sefuaga. Some questions for Trevor Penning, some questions about who plays guard. But obviously, the Saints really were enamored with Kelvin Banks. They ended up with him. We're still going to hear a lot about quarterbacks in this second round. But Charlie, how you feeling? How do you feel about Kelvin Banks? What was your initial reaction, and where are you right now?
Yeah, the top eight was pretty fascinating, wasn't it? Like, just how, you know, obviously the Travis Hunter trade with Jacksonville from 5-2 was the first big kind of domino to fall. But I think the first real shocker of the night was Carolina at pick 8. One pick before the Saints. Everyone had them pinned for a defensive player. Everyone thought they were going Jalen Walker. They instead go the big body receiver, Tet McMillan from Arizona. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, well, the Saints could go Jalen here and have their traditional 3-4 outside linebacker spot filled. They could potentially go Tyler Warren and have that do-it-all offensive weapon. But as, you know, Kellen Moore said in the post-draft presser, it's a big boy game, Jeff. And so they go with the best offensive lineman available, and they get Kelvin Banks from Texas.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He said it's a big boy game. He said that to us in the pre-draft show. In the post-draft press conference, he said it's a trenches game, which, you know, I feel like he's saying the same thing, obviously. But yeah, the Saints were telling us for days, this is kind of what you're looking at. Like, we heard, want to build from the inside out. It's a big boy game. It's a trenches game. You know, they were telling you without telling you, hey, get ready for an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman or whatever. I think edge rusher is still a pretty big need. But, you know, it's a situation that I just don't – if until your offensive line is where it needs to be, you know, whether it's your biggest need, whether it's, you know, up there on the list, you got to keep taking shots at it. And I've seen people say, well, it didn't work with Trevor Penning. Why do you keep spending picks on the offensive line? Well, you know, the Trevor Penning pick is why you're still spending picks on the offensive line, because you got to get that sorted out. And they didn't pick up his option. You know, I don't think that made the decision that they were going to take an offensive tackle, but I think their willingness to take an offensive tackle, if Kelvin Banks was on the board, it kind of made that decision for you. And I've seen people say it's a reach. I don't think it was a reach. We talked to Kelvin, and he kind of had his radar up anywhere from 6 on. He felt like, okay, this is a place I could land. The Jets took a tackle at number 7. So clearly there was some market there. I think Kelvin kind of fell down draft boards. I think he became a victim of people overthinking the situation, because when you look at him as a player, when you look at the skill set, the athleticism, the size, the ability, the demonstrated success at in the Big Ten, in the SEC, at Texas, a team that's been to the college football playoff semifinal each of the last 2 years. You know, it's the inverse of a Trevor Penning, a guy that you kind of had questions about the production, how he was going to develop at the NFL level. I don't have any questions about Kelvin Banks' production. My only question is where they choose to play him on day one.
Yeah, and the guys kind of dove a little bit into that. And to your point about Kelvin Banks and how high he could have gone, there were reports, Jeff, that that trade with Travis Hunter, where Jacksonville moved up from 5-2 to get the unicorn out of Colorado, the Heisman winner, had they stayed put at pick 5, and there was a lot of buzz that they really liked Ashton Jeanty, and Jeanty was off the board at pick 5, then the report is that the Raiders would have gone Kelvin Banks with the 6th overall pick. Now, because Jeanty was there, they went with the best player on their board. John Spytek kind of talked a little bit about that. But it's really funny how, you know, one trade really, really early in the draft kind of shaped that top 10 significantly. And, you know, Kelvin Banks ends up falling to pick 9.
And the only trade in the top end of the draft. We didn't see another trade until the Giants came back in and took Jackson Dart.
We should get into you know, the Atlanta Falcons trade eventually. We'll talk about that later, because it's definitely a questionable value. But staying with Kelvin, and kind of to your point about his production at the college level, his durability was also fantastic at Texas. You know, starting all 13 games at left tackle his freshman year in 2022, sophomore year, he was a first-team All-Big 12 member, started all 14 games at left tackle. And then 2024, he won all these different awards. He was a unanimous All-American. He started 15 games at left tackle. He only missed one game that season. It was the SEC championship game where he had a left ankle injury. So out of 3 years where he was a three-year starter at left tackle at Texas, he only missed one game.
Right, and the competition level, you know, I don't think you're going to get much better than what you saw.
Well, that's like what people were complaining about with, like, the Northern Iowa pick with Trevor Penning. But, like, this is different, right? And it was the same thing with Will Campbell, who was a three-year starter at LSU. A three-year starter at left tackle at Texas, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like the Patriots, I think he's going to do great with them. I think Kelvin is a great pick for the Saints at number 9. And, you know, one thing that I was looking at, a lot of people are going to talk about the Eagles and how the Eagles found their success with Kellen Moore last year. I go back to the Cowboys in 2016. Kellen Moore, I've been doing that, Kelvin and Kellen, it's tough.
Yes.
Kellen Moore was on that Cowboys roster. He was a quarterback. He was a player in 2016, the year that they drafted Dak Prescott, slotted him behind arguably the best offensive line in the NFL, arguably with the best run game in the NFL with Ezekiel Elliott, and you had a fourth-round rookie quarterback immediately have success. He was the offensive rookie of the year. And to me, it's like, yeah, I go back to there. He sat there in first person, watched that happen. So it shouldn't be a surprise. He went out to the Eagles and kind of had success the same way. You built the offensive line. You pounded people over the head with a devastating game, and you had success. There should be no surprise that Kellen Moore and the Saints are in lockstep on their kind of philosophical belief that you need to start with the offensive line and build out from there. You know, we talked about it extensively yesterday. Going back to 2015, the Saints have used all – they have taken a first-round offensive or defensive lineman every year other than 2019, when they used their top pick, a second-rounder, to take Eric McCoy. So it's not new. It's just how they build, and it's their belief system.
Yeah, and so, you know, three tackles going in the top 9 as well, Jeff. I think we've called this draft, and a lot of folks have called it the same thing, the quote-unquote meat and potatoes draft, where it doesn't have, like, the super flash or pizzazz of last year with all the quarterbacks and top-level wide receivers. But if you can get some solid-level starters throughout this year or this year's draft, I think you're feeling pretty good. And Kelvin Banks just feels like a safe pick. He has, and we talked with him last night after the selection. He came on with Bobby, Mike, Deuce, Haas, and Steve, and the guys got to speak with him. Also a very high-character guy. You can kind of hear it in his voice and how he answers the questions that they were throwing at him. We'll play that interview for those that missed it last night in a little bit here. But it's great stuff from Kelvin, and I'm really looking forward to seeing him in a black and gold uniform. Going back to your question from earlier, though, it's now how the Saints coaching staff will use him, because he is a day one starter. There's no question about it. There's a guy that's going to be plug and play for the Saints right off the bat. Now, what do they decide to do? Do they put him at left tackle, which has been his natural position for the 30-plus games that he played at Texas, and then move Taliese Fuaga back to right tackle? Or do you potentially keep Talley at left tackle because he was so good at left tackle in his rookie campaign, and you maybe play Kelvin Banks at left guard because that's kind of the question mark on this offensive line? And then you just have a real badass, you know, left side of your offensive line. I think it's an interesting one. Obviously, the Saints coaching staff will decide what they want to do with them. But when you can just kind of get a top level or top of the line offensive line prospect, you know, you can't pass on doing it.
No question. We're going to get more into the rest of the first round with Justin Mello when he comes on at 4:35, draft analyst for the Draft Network. We're also going to hand off to Draft Fest starting at 6 p.m. You got the guys Deuce, Haas, Bobby Hebert, Mike Dottilli, and Steve Geller out at Hooters in Metairie. But, you know, I am curious on your take. You know, a lot of people wanted a skill position. Tyler Warren was staring people in the face, a very popular pick, or at least a very popular mock draft pick for the Saints. And he kind of felt like, man, they could go here. They could really set up that offense. And, you know, not only did they not go Tyler Warren, Tyler Warren wasn't even the first tight end off the board. It was actually Colston Loveland out of Michigan who went to the Bears. Tyler Warren went two picks later. But, you know, I think that's a good indicator that, you know, we could sit here all day long, talk about mock drafts, have all these discussions. At the end of the day, so much of the, kind of the mock draft conversations is a guess. And we're kind of trying to figure out, oh, how much does this team like this guy? How much does this team like this guy? You know, we were talking about, is a tight end worth a top 10 pick? We didn't even have the right tight end. We didn't have the right tight end one in this draft class. So I just thought that was kind of fascinating to watch happen.
Yeah, and it was funny because, you know, it felt like the Jets pick at 7 was always going to be one of Armon Membu, the right tackle from Missouri, or Tyler Warren, the tight end from Penn State. They go with, obviously, Membu. And at that point, you're wondering, okay, is Kellen Moore going to get this, you know, offensive weapon for the Saints at pick 9? And Warren didn't just go behind Loveland. He went a couple picks behind Loveland. And he went to, you know, the Colts, who everybody, it was the worst kept secret in pre-draft process that the Colts were going to take one of those two tight ends, especially if one of them were available. If both of them were gone at that point, they would have been in some trouble. But it was a huge hole that they had to fill. Tyler Warren goes behind Colston Loveland. A lot of the buzz, though, kind of leading up to the draft, Jeff, was that, yes, a lot of people had Warren as the higher-ranked player because he was the best tight end in college football this past year. But around league circles, it felt like it was really, really close. And some teams obviously had him above Loveland, above Warren. And the Bears obviously were one of those teams.
No question. No question. What do you think of the Saints pick? Hit us up on the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line 504-260-1870. We're obviously going to get a lot more into the second round. The Saints have three picks today. They pick at number 40. They pick at number 71. They pick at number 93. That is if there aren't any changes, if there aren't any trades. When we come back, I want to talk more about quarterbacks. What did you think about the quarterbacks that came off the board? Only two of them in the first round. What do you think of the quarterbacks left on the board? We're going to get into all that and a lot more, kicking off a long day of Draft Fest coverage. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, Cullen Steele behind the glass. Keep it locked on WWE.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Welcome back to Draft First Take here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside Charlie Long, kicking off today's coverage of the Saints and the NFL draft. We got rounds 2 and 3 coming up. Saints have three picks right now. Seems like it's going to be a busy day. We'll find out. Saints fans, get out to Hooters of Metairie on Veterans Boulevard for all the live action of the draft, plus all pro analysis and exclusive interviews with all the Saints draft picks here from Bob Hebert, Mike Dottilier, Deuce McAllister, Steve Geller, and Mike Haas. And Charlie, you know, the quarterbacks were always going to be a big conversation. They were a big conversation coming in. There was a lot of debate over Shedeur Sanders. Is he a first-round pick? Is he a number 2 overall pick? Is he a second-round pick? Well, the NFL told you that they did not feel he was a first-round pick. Cam Ward came off the board at number 1 overall to the Titans, as we all expected. Then we waited and we waited and we waited. The Saints didn't pick a quarterback at number 9. The Steelers didn't pick a quarterback at number 21, and then the Giants traded in. They took Jaxon Dart over Shedeur Sanders. Now, the Browns have two picks at the top of the second round. If they want to go Shedeur like they didn't at number two or number five, they can do it. They're going to have two chances to do it. But what was kind of your take on the quarterback situation? Because I thought there was the potential for teams to kind of start stumbling over each other, trying to trade in the back end of the first to pick up a quarterback with a fifth-year option at the back end of their contract. We didn't see that. I expect some of these guys to go off quick in round two.
Yeah, the only one was Dart with the Giants. With, you know, this quarterback class, it just kind of reaffirmed that the NFL does not like this group of QBs, right? Like, Cam Ward was viewed as the 101. I know that I think it was Jeff Ireland had talked about him as one of his two favorite prospects in this class. But, you know, outside of that, there's a big drop-off from Cam Ward to QB2. And QB2 ended up being Dart. I know that a lot of people were really, you know, questioning why Shedeur fell out of the first round entirely. But, and listen, he's going to be picked at some point in round two. I think relatively early in round two as well. We'll see where exactly he goes. I'm still not convinced, Jeff, that he goes to the Saints if he's there at pick 40. I just don't, you know, and we'll see. I could be wrong, but everything in the pre-draft process tells me that maybe Kellen is a little bit more intrigued by Jalen Milroe and Tyler Shuck from Louisville, you know, regardless of what you feel about either one of those prospects, than someone like Shedeur.
Yeah, I do think, you know, it's funny because it's like you look at some of the draft slides in the past. You know, Aaron Rodgers is the one that everyone kind of goes to, and he was actually in the green room with the scowl on his face. Like, when are they going to take me? He did go in the first round, obviously, to the Packers, but he fell all the way to the back end. I don't think we should, you know, like, the reason Shedeur feels like that is because what everyone was being told was not believed, right? Like, I think throughout this entire process, you heard from so many different avenues of, I don't know if this guy's a first round pick. You know, he might be a good quarterback, but I don't think he is a top 10 quarterback. Is he a first round quarterback? And at the end of the day, he wasn't, right? But I don't think it was, oh, there's character concerns, there's this and that, and suddenly I'm not taking him at number two, I'm not taking him at number five, I'm not taking him at number nine. I don't think these teams really ever were in on him to not take him. Now, Jaxon Dart, I think, is a different story, and we'll really see what people feel about Shedeur in this round if he falls out of the second round entirely. I agree with you. I don't know if the Saints are in on Shedeur.
Right.
I think it's more likely they end up with a Jalen Milroe. I think Tyler Shuck, you know, people aren't going to get excited about Tyler Shuck. I think Tyler Shuck is the second-best quarterback in this draft. Personally,
some people viewed him as the first, and that's a really intriguing one. Like, Jeff, I don't know. Like, we'll see what happens with the quarterback group. Then once we're sitting at pick 40, we had a couple people text in saying that they were happy that the Saints didn't trade up. And I agree.
Yeah.
For moving up into the first round, you would have had to give up a lot of capital, as you saw from the Falcons and, you know, that ridiculous trade that Terry Fontenot cooked up to move up and get James Pierce Jr.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
We'll definitely talk about that specifically with Justin Mello. I want to get his thoughts. But there's a lot of really good players on the board available right now. So if you're sitting at pick 40 and one of these guys falls into your lap and maybe he's like a top 25 player on your board, do you force the quarterback? That's kind of my question. It's like, or do you just stick with your board, go with the best player available at pick 40 if it's someone that's, you know, in your top 25-ish, maybe closer to 30 that just falls right into your lap? Because there are some really good players available.
I think it's specifically at the cornerback position.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to get into more about what Alante Taylor said on WWL. This is going to be a shorter segment, so we won't have time. But, you know, I think I don't know if you're going to play Alante outside. I think you need another outside corner because I think Alante is going to fit into this, you know, star position. That's what Brandon Staley calls it. He doesn't call it a nickel. He calls it a star, and it's more of a hybrid linebacker safety in terms of responsibilities. It's what Jalen Ramsey played in 2020 with the Rams. It's what Derwin James played. So I think cornerback is a position of need, and there's some really intriguing cornerbacks still on the board with Will Johnson and, you know, Trey Amos and some of these other guys. Chevon Revel's still on the board coming off that knee injury. But I just, you know, it's going to be tough for me when I get to number 40, assuming they don't trade up, and I'm not in love with any of these players. Like, I like some of these quarterbacks. I think they could develop. I am not in love with any of these quarterbacks. And when you see the level of talent that you could bring in, it's just tough to sell when, you know, are they better? Like, are these better prospects than Spencer Rattler? I don't know if they are.
Right. And so then you're looking at, once again, potentially forcing a quarterback at 40 versus taking a better prospect, someone that's higher on your board. And so that's going to be an interesting question that we'll have to see how they answer it. I went on with Scoot earlier, Jeff, and I basically said I imagine that it's a little bit over a 50-50 split that they kind of go quarterback at the 40th overall pick. But, you know, there's also ways that you can play this where do we go a top corner? Like you mentioned, Will Johnson's falling because there's apparently some issues with his knee. And that's why he wasn't a first-round player. Like, if you look at what he did in 2023, entering the year, he was like a top five prospect. And he was viewed very heavily to be a top 10-ish or so pick in the 2025 draft. But he's got some issues with his knee. That's why he's following the medical reasons. Trey Amos, I love him. I mean, I'm biased because he's a former UL guy. Raging Cajun that transferred to Alabama before transferring to Ole Miss. Mike described him as someone with a quote-unquote athletic arrogance to him, where he hates giving up catches, but he doesn't let it negatively affect his play either. So I really like him as a prospect. He could play either man or zone as well. Deuce had a great evaluation of him last night. And then Savone Revel, as you kind of mentioned, from East Carolina, a freak athlete. Complete freak. That would have been a first-round pick had it not been for a torn ACL. So a couple, you know, medical issues here for some of these top corners, but the corner class this year as well isn't the best. So if you're going to get one, and it is a position of need, moving on from Marshawn Lattimore and losing Paulson Adebo in free agency, I think they should absolutely do it earlier rather than later.
Right, because I don't think they're going to be there later, and that's the issue. If you don't do it in the second round, I don't know if those guys are going to be there, even in the third round where you have two picks. But all right, we're going to be coming back with Justin Mallow of the Draft Network, break down his thoughts on last night, the first round, and his expectations for rounds two and three tonight. We'll be back with more of the Draft First Take show brought to you by TrainSouth.com right after this on WWL. Back in on WWL, kicking off Draft First Take, a busy day of draft coverage, rounds two and three. Saints have three picks. I'm Jeff Nowak. He's Charlie Long. This show is brought to you by TrainSouth.com. And we're going to go to the Oakwin Heart Jewelers talk and text line, bring in a friend of the program, Justin Mallow of the Draft Network. A lot to talk about. Busy first day. You know, the transition from Friday to Saturday is always the brutal one for me. But how are you feeling, Justin? How did the first round treat you?
I'm feeling good. Yeah, I thought it was a fun round. You know, a little unpredictable. You know, kind of started right off the top, right? It was a little surprised that Cleveland traded out of the Travis Hunter pick. Though they did get great value in return for making that decision. You know, wasn't any, you know, real stunners in the opening five, I'd say. But once you got down there, I thought New Orleans with Kelvin Banks, I thought was a bit of a surprise. Certainly Tyler Booker to the Cowboys, did not have that on my bingo card at 12. And then it even goes late. You know, Tyreek Williams to Detroit, I thought was probably more of a second round pick. So definitely a fun round, lots of action and lots of unpredictability.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned, you know, the Browns trading out of the Travis Hunter spot. What did you think of the Jaguars trading in to the Travis Hunter spot, both in terms of how much they gave up and kind of like, I kind of see it as, hey, if I'm trading up, if I'm giving up that much for Travis Hunter, it's because I'm committed to playing him both ways. You know, I think if the Browns took him, they might have had a decision to make of like, how much are we going to do this? When you're investing that much in a potential two-way star, you're going up to get the two-way star, right?
Yeah, they gave up a lot. There's no doubt about it. I think if you had looked at one of those old, you know, older-fashioned trade charts, if you will, Jacksonville lost that trade by about 1,300 points. Now, if you're sitting at home and wondering what that means, that's the equivalent of the eighth overall pick. You know, they essentially gave up, in terms of extra points, an extra eighth overall pick in the top 10. So they gave up a lot. You know, there's no denying. I respect the aggressiveness. You know, there are people out there. I talked to scouts throughout this process who think that Travis Hunter's a Hall of Famer. You know, so I think for Jacksonville, if he ends up being the kind of guy that they think he can be, they're not going to regret that move. Now, what is interesting is you talk about if you're going up and making that move, that he's a two-way guy. Well, they didn't necessarily say that in their press conference after taking him. They said that he'd start in the wide receiver room, and we'll get him in there to the DB room a little bit. But they certainly, you know, they pumped the brakes a little on him being a full-time two-way guy. So I respect the aggressiveness from a 34-year-old first-year, first-time general manager in James Gladstone. Certainly, this is a decision that'll be put under the microscope, for years to come, and it'll be interesting to see how it pays off.
Okay, Justin, I want to get your thoughts on the other two trades into the first round because they had very different value, in my opinion. The Falcons moving up to 26. They also get, you know, pick 101, which is the third-round pick this year. The Rams move back from 26. They move back 20 spots to 46. They get a seventh-round pick and a 2026 first-rounder. And then one pick prior, the Giants make that trade up to get Jackson Dart to 25 with the Texans, where they send the Texans 34, 99, a third-round pick, and a 2026 third-round pick. I know the jump from 34 to 25 is obviously pretty significant versus 46 to 26, but, I mean, is it really, you know, with the Texans getting two third-round picks and then the Rams get a 2026 first-round pick, it just seemed kind of strange.
Yeah, Atlanta gave up a lot. You know, there's no denying. It's funny. If you followed that team, and I mean, you guys are in the same division, if you'd followed that team over the last couple of years, they've really struggled to solve the pass rushing position, right? They've thrown money at it in free agency. They've gotten veterans. You know, they brought in Bud Dupree at one point. They made the trade for Matthew Judon. They have missed on a ton of drafted pass rushers. You know, but they were always half measures, right? They had the Penn State kid, Arnold Abitike, for a while, D'Angelo Malone. Like, they've just missed on mid-round rusher after mid-round rusher. They've missed in free agency. You know, they get Jalen Walker there, and then they decide to their pass rush has been that bad in recent years. They had to double down. But this is a very, very risky move. Make no mistake about it. Not only what they gave up, but the prospect they came up to get, right? I don't know if you guys are familiar with, you know, Bob McGinn. He writes that piece every year on Go Long. It's terrific, where he talks to scouts about, you know, character concerns. One of them, you know, of course, anonymously said that James Pierce had some of the worst character he had ever seen in terms of some of the off-field stuff. Now, nothing, you know, nothing legal or anything like that, but just from an attitude and effort and personality standpoint. So he's got a lot of potential. He's a long guy. When he's on, he's on. But, you know, he was very inconsistent on tape as a run defender. In fact, to the point where they started taking him off the field altogether in obvious rundowns. And I don't think the pass rushing production quite met expectations this year. So it's a massive roll of dice for Atlanta. And they gave up a ton to go get a guy that if they miss on, it's going to be a big miss.
Justin, before we get into the second round and some of the prospects still on the board, I wanted to get your thoughts on the rest of the NFC South. Because in my opinion, Carolina, you know, outside of, I guess, the top five trade, with Jacksonville going up to get Travis Hunter, Carolina kind of made the first surprise of the night because, you know, throughout the entire pre-draft process, they were tied to Jalen Walker. They were tied to drafting a defensive player, maybe a defensive lineman with the eighth overall pick. And they go Tet McMillan from Arizona, the big body wide receiver, to kind of help their passing attack with Bryce Young and continue his growth. But then later on in the first round as well, another kind of surprising pick with Tampa Bay. You know, similar situation where they were tied to Jihad Campbell. They were tied to Donovan Azeraku, who didn't end up getting picked in the first round at all. Some different defensive players. And they go another wide receiver weapon with Emeka Ebuka from Ohio State. It was a little bit surprising for the NFC South with those two teams outside of what happened with Atlanta.
Yeah, I thought Carolina was a bit of a surprise. I didn't think it was a major one because anytime you got a quarterback that, you know, number one overall, you're still invested in and you're trying to figure out if he's the future or not. Because obviously, you know, things haven't quite gone as swimmingly as you hoped they would. Though this past year, I think, you know, certainly showed more promise than we thought he was going to show after that disaster of a rookie year. When you have a chance to go out and get a big bodied, you know, QB friendly ex boundary playmaker, if you will, I'm not shocked they pulled the trigger on that. Now, they were the worst pass rushing unit in the league, in my opinion, last year. So certainly it would have made, you know, some sense to go get a Jalen Walker, even a Michael Williams, you know, who went just a couple picks later to San Francisco. But they just couldn't resist the urge, you know, to kind of get Bryce Young some help. And they don't have a true X, right? I think they've got a slot guy and they've got a couple Z receivers, I would argue, but not a real X type of guy. So they couldn't resist that temptation. Now, going over to Tampa Bay, I did think that was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, a best player available decision, in my opinion. Now, you know, you can never be too rich, I think, as most people would agree. But, you know, to go get him after re-signing Emeka Ebuka, that is, after re-signing Chris Godwin, it did surprise me a little. But Jason Lynn up there, Jason Lynn's a smart general manager. I think he knows, you know, Godwin coming off that injury, even though they gave him what they gave him, Mike, and you pair Mike Evans in that, they're not going to be there forever, all right? They're not going to be there for much longer than they are now. So at some point, they're probably going to be very, very thankful that they made that pick. I don't know that it'll pay immediate dividends. I'm curious to see how they get all these guys on the field. So remember, they took Jalen McMillan last year. Was it second round, I think it was? So they've got quite a bit invested in that position. You can't play all four of them at the same time. Certainly, you're going to have injuries. Guys are going to get banged up, and he'll probably have a rookie year impact, but I do agree. I thought Jihad Campbell was a great fit for the Todd Bowles defense. I know he had, you know, there was an injury flag before the draft, so that's potentially why he didn't go as early as I thought he might go. But certainly, I thought, you know, Tampa certainly was the bigger surprise to me.
Yeah, so we talked about all the other picks in the division but the Saints pick. So I do need to get your opinion on Kelvin Banks at number 9. You know, I saw some people say it was a bit of a reach. I think it's easy to forget. You know, you go into this season and Kelvin Banks is probably the top offensive tackle prospect. Obviously, Will Campbell, these guys are up there. But, you know, he's a big name that I think maybe got slept on a little bit throughout this process. What did you think of the Saints' decision to bring him in, and what do you think of the player?
I think my first thought was, and pardon me, I haven't seen if they've clarified this via, you know, post-draft press conference, but my initial thought was, where are they going to play him, right? Because as we know, you know, he played left tackle this year for Texas. There was talk throughout the off, you know, the pre-draft process that maybe he kicks inside to guard. But when I look at what they have there, you know, you drafted Talese Fuaga last year in the first round. I never regret, you know, over-investing in linemen, but you moved him from the right to the left, right? From Oregon State there on the right side. So what do you do now? You know, are you asking Kelvin Banks to learn the right side? Are you moving Fuaga back to the right side after asking him to make the transition last off season? Or are you just playing Kelvin Banks at guard, right? So that's the number one question I had as soon as they made the move. So that's very interesting. I wonder what they do with Fuaga and where they play Banks. Either way, you're making one of them uncomfortable in some sense, right? Or, you know, Fuaga would probably have no issues going back to the right, but it seems kind of silly, right, after you ask him to be your left tackle. That was the first thing that struck me. The player itself, you know, I liked him on tape. I thought we overcomplicated the situation a little bit. I thought he was a left tackle, personally. You know, that was my opinion during the process. I didn't really agree with all the chatter of him kicking inside. I think he can do it, but I didn't think that he can't play tackle, right? So I do think he can play tackle. He's big. I think he moves well for his size. A little inconsistent on tape. Has to get a bit better with balance issues, pad level, things of that nature. But I thought they got a good, you know, quality football player. I'm just curious what the plan is.
Justin, every single year players fall out of the first round that you kind of envision as being first round picks. And with the Saints picking at pick 40, they're not going to have to wait long into the second round for their second selection in this draft class. I want to get your thoughts on some of the top prospects still left available that you were surprised made it to this point, and if any of those guys could potentially fall to 40.
Yeah, the two that struck me, or maybe three, and we know why all three didn't get drafted in the first round. One of them is Mike Green, you know, the edge rusher out of Marshall. You know, there's an alleged, you know, legal, you know, off-field situation there that teams had questions about and obviously weren't comfortable with because I thought he was a top 15 player on tape. So for him not to go in the opening 32, there was obviously some, you know, at best mixed feelings regarding the off-field situation. The one that really stunned me was Will Johnson, the corner out of Michigan. Now, I know he missed the majority of this past season with a shoulder injury, and then apparently a potentially chronic knee injury was flagged during the rechecks, the medical rechecks. So that explains that. But I thought on tape, I thought he's one of the six or seven best players in this draft. So those two are big ones. Luther Burden from Missouri is the other. You know, again, another guy similar to Mike Green, where, you know, there's a character, alleged character concerns. It's not a legal situation like Mike Green's may have been, but there is certainly some effort and attitude questions regarding Burden's evaluation, and that's why he fell. I didn't even mention Shador Sanders, right? I think those three guys were the first, you know, big surprises to me. I thought all three of them were first-round talents. There's a lot left on the board. You know, you mentioned Donovan Ezeraku is another one that I think is going to go really early. Where do these quarterbacks land? We've got three of them, right, that are potential, were being talked about as potential first-round picks. So there's a lot of talent left on the board. A lot of receivers, too. Jalen Noel, Jaden Higgins, Iowa State pair. Really curious to see how the chips fall.
Yeah, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. One more question. You know, if you're picking at 33, if you're the Browns and you're like, hey, we're going to take a swing on one of these quarterbacks, who is it?
Yeah, I think mine would have been Shador Sanders, right? I would have had him ahead of Jalen Milroe or Tyler Shuck throughout this process. I think, and I've got concerns about Sanders. I think I said that the last time I was on here. There are things about his game that I don't love, and that's not even taking, you know, the off-field questions or the attitude stuff or his father, taking any of that into consideration. They're just aspects of his game I wasn't super comfortable with, but I am more comfortable with it than anything, you know, Jalen Milroe, who's, you know, probably got the highest upside of any of them. And if you hit, it's going to hit big. But there's a, you know, there's the base is really low on him too, right? Not an accurate passer right now. You know, in the 50% in terms of accuracy this past year. But if you hit, again, you build that offense around him. He runs a 4.39. You've seen what the Eagles have done with Jalen Hurts, what the Ravens have done with Lamar Jackson. Though I'd argue both of them are better throwers of the football than he is. There's potential there. But with Shador, I'm just more comfortable with some of the traditional aspects of his game. I know he's very accurate. He reads the game at a high level, very good diagnosing pre-snap. And when he makes decisions, you know, that's his biggest issue. When he can make a decisive decision, he does so at a high level, and he gets the ball out on time, and he's accurate. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But if I was Cleveland at 33, if they didn't trade out of the Travis Hunter pick, they would have had a chance to reunite Travis Hunter and Shador Sanders, right? That would have been interesting, but they decided not to go that route.
Just for fun, Justin, before we let you run, your favorite pick from day one of the draft?
Oh, boy, that is tough. Abdul Carter was my number one ranked player, pre-draft. I kind of respect that the Giants didn't overthink the process, and they could have. You know, they got two edge rushers, two great ones under contract, rookie contracts at that. One of them on the rookie contract, the other one they traded for and gave up a lot to get him and paid him handsomely. So they could have overcomplicated. You got a GM and a head coach who are clearly on the hot seat. They needed to get a quarterback there. They need to get one. They come up and get Jackson Dart later, but they didn't. They fought that temptation at three. They took the best player. I think they got one who's going to be an outstanding football player, a Pro Bowl type rusher in Abdul Carter.
All right, great stuff as always, Justin Mello of the Draft Network. I know this is a busy week for you, so I appreciate you taking the time. And I know you do a lot of work going into this, so to make sure to enjoy it, man.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Justin.
All right. Stick around for more of Draft First Take, followed by the TrainSouth.com WWL Draft Fest coming up at 6 o'clock live from Hooters of Metairie on Veterans Boulevard. Keep it locked on WWL. All right, Houdat Nation, welcome to Draft Fest Friday. We're getting ready for rounds 2 and 3. I'm Jeff Nowak alongside WWL Swiss Army Knife Charlie Long. We're sizing up yesterday's draft, went through a lot of that in the first hour. Next hour, we're going to dive more into rounds 2 and 3. Saints currently hold pick number 40 in the second round, and then 71 and 93 in the third round. We're going to take you up till 6 p.m. Then we're going to toss over to the guys at Hooters in Metairie, get the takes from Mike D'Atelier, Bobby Hebert, Deuce McAllister, Steve Geller, and Mike Haas. Going to be a busy night. Make sure to keep it locked on WWL for all the action. Hoot at, let's do it.